Lizzie, your millennial movie matchmaker. So let's talk about this week's topic. We are going to be talking about the newest movie available to rent or buy via iTunes, and that is Music. That is the newest movie starring Kate Hudson, Leslie Odom Jr., and Maddie Ziegler. And we're going to get into that in just a little bit, because in true millennial movie matchmaker fashion, we are going to first rate our old faves. So the movie Music is a pretty unique movie. To give you a very, very quick recap, it is all about a character, Zoo, who is played by Kate Hudson, and she is a recovering addict. And she finds out that she is now the primary caregiver for her younger sister, Music. And now what makes Music so special is that she is on the autism spectrum. So she sees the world in a completely different way than Zoo or someone who maybe is not on the spectrum. So the movie really beautifully jumps back and forth between how Zoo perceives the world and her vantage point of reality versus Music's. And again, I'm not going to get too deep into the movie or what I thought about it, but because it is a genre almost all on its own, instead of focusing on a genre for my top five, I'm going to focus on my top five favorite Kate Hudson movies. That's right. This is the first time that I've actually focused in on one particular actor or actress. I'm excited about it. I actually love Kate Hudson's body of work. So I had a lot to choose from, but I feel good about my top five. So without further ado, let's go ahead and roll on in. Of course, in true millennial movie matchmaker fashion, we have to talk about my honorable mention. So quick recap on that. That is either a movie that I found to be so phenomenal or so terrible, possibly both. But either way, I want to dedicate just a few moments to acknowledging this movie that was not good enough to be on my top five. And so my honorable mention with respect to Kate Hudson movies is Bride Wars. Now, this movie, I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going to fall into that middle area where the movie is not really that well done. There's a lot of holes in the story. It's very unrealistic. But for whatever reason, it just tingles all of that estrogen in my body that just loves a good chick flick. So it's both. It's both. I love it and I despise it all at the exact same time. So the movie stars, of course, Kate Hudson. Obviously, she plays the character of Liv. And then there's her best friend, Emma, who is played by Anne Hathaway. And so the two of them have been best friends for 20 plus years. Now, they both just happened to get engaged around the same time. And their whole friendship, for the most part, has been revolving around this idea that they're both going to get married in the month of June at the Plaza. And so when they both get engaged at the same time, they both go to the same wedding planner, and it turns out that everything is going to fall perfectly into place, right? There's one weekend in June that's going to work for Liv, and then 2 weeks later, the same for Emma. But alas, when one new customer comes in, new client comes in, she somehow is able to get another date in June. And when scheduling everything, it turns out that a clerical mistake is made and both Liv and Emma's weddings are now on the exact same day. And so now these once best friends, cherished people within each other's lives, quickly become frenemies, and they dedicate the rest of the movie to sabotaging the other's wedding experience. Now, again, this movie, it really tugs on all of those appropriate heartstrings, if you will, and all of those estrogen levels, all the serotonin, all the things that you need to really hit for a good chick flick. But what I don't like about this movie is just how unrealistic it is. I have one particular friend that I'm thinking of. She's actually in the wedding business, and her and I have been friends since we were 9. We are about to turn 33. I will let you do the math because it is 8:15. I have put both of my children down for the night, and I am done with having to use my brain. So, and to be totally honest, I think her and I probably are protected from, I mean, we're both married, so obviously the point is moot, but I think in the event that this were us, I just can never imagine a world where, first and foremost, don't you want your wedding to be original? Like, isn't it boring that even if things did work out with your original date, that you're going to invite more or less all of the exact same guests to the exact same location just 3 weeks apart? I mean, how differently can you style that like 70s decor rug that's in every single hotel ballroom? I mean, it's just not, it doesn't hit for me. And I can't get over how unrealistic it is that two grown women would actually treat each other that way. And now, is it entertaining? Of course it is. But does it make for a classic? No, it sure doesn't. So that's why we're on the honorable mention list. But at the end of the day, hey, guess what? If I need to clean my house or take a nap or do anything that would require some background noise, I mean, this is a great movie to put on, quite frankly. So it's definitely, I would say top 6, but alas, that's not what we do here. We do the top 5. So there you go. All right, so let's go ahead and move into my actual top 5. Remember, we are rating my top 5 favorite movies starring Kate Hudson. And we're going to go into number 5, that is Raising Helen. Now, this movie, of course, obviously stars Kate Hudson. She plays the character of Helen Harris. Now, she is one of 3 sisters. She is the youngest, followed by Joan Cusack, who plays Jenny. She is the yin to her yang. You know, Helen is all about going out and partying. You know, she wears all the tight, sexy, sparkly dresses, and she lives right in this amazing area in Manhattan and just living this amazing life that you would expect, you know, very Carrie Bradshaw adjacent. And then Joan Cusack lives in upstate New York, and she's got 3 kids, or I'm pretty sure she's got multiple children, and, you know, she's kind of the hyperbolic version of a housewife. You know, they kind of do what they can to make her look a little frumpy, and she's not nearly as hot and sexy as Helen's character. And now there's the oldest, who is played by Felicity Huffman. She plays the character of Lindsay. And there's a name that you haven't heard in a while. Felicity Huffman. Back in the day where she actually acted, I'll let you think of your own college admission scandal joke there. I will not go for the low-hanging fruit, but I will open the doors for everyone else too. So the 3 of them are, again, they are sisters. They all love each other dearly. Lindsay, the oldest, has 3 children. Hayden Panettiere plays the oldest, Audrey. And then you have real-life siblings, Abigail Breslin, who plays Sarah, and Spencer Breslin, who plays Henry. Now, it just has to be said very, very quickly. Side note, I cannot stand Spencer Breslin. I don't know if you all ever watched the show Even Steven. He was the character Beans. I mean, that's kind of enough said. And he was also, I think the movie was The Kid with Bruce Willis. There's a very, very obnoxious quality about him. And I really hate saying that about a child, but I also think that, you know, self-awareness is important, and it's just, I have to speak my truth. Spencer Breslin is obnoxious. So there, I said it. So these 3 kids, they all belong to Lindsay. They're one big happy family, and they just love their fun Aunt Helen. Well, it just so happens that Lindsay and her husband get into a very tragic, very unfortunate fatal car accident. And when the two other sisters, Jenny and Helen, are looking over all of Lindsay's wishes, it states very clearly that their children, in the event of a loss such as the one that has occurred, that Helen is to become the sole caregiver of her children. Now, of course, this leaves Jenny in a complete uproar, right? Because Jenny is the mom. You know, she is a mother. She understands the drill of the children and the structure and all the things that kids need to thrive. Helen is a party girl. You know, she's out going to clubs, dancing to Usher and drinking bottles and all the things. So she is in no condition to parent three children. But alas, this was Lindsay's wish, and so they decide to go ahead and follow through with that. And the movie is really just all about just that. You know, it's Helen's coming-of-age tale. You know, it's her learning to grow up, learning to accept the reality that she's living now. And, you know, there's some really fun, like, stepmom-adjacent scenes in the movie because, you know, Hayden Panettiere is, like, you know, right on the brink of puberty, and so she's interested in boys. And so Helen gets to have that fun birds and the bees conversation and help her really look cool and above it all in front of her beau. And it's just, it's such a sweet, sweet, endearing movie. And then throughout this whole change in their lives, she also ends up meeting a man played by John Corbet. He plays Pastor Dan. He is a Lutheran pastor. And just to me, this whole movie is just like so darling. Like, I just love the idea of like a 25-year-old party girl, like all of a sudden within the blink of an eye becoming a mom of three. Like, holy crap. Like, thinking about it now sounds like such an utter nightmare. I had my son at 27. So, I mean, I wasn't too far off, but like there's a huge difference between having 10 months of pregnancy and then having an infant and raising that infant and all the things than to just like, wow, you wake up one morning and here are three children. It's just very, very comical to think about now as an adult. But this is a great movie. This is a great family night movie. I think if your kids are, I would say, like maybe above the age of 11, you know, so that they're old enough to kind of understand the general concept, you're comfortable explaining the concept of death with them. I know that not every parent is fully comfortable with that. This is a great movie given those circumstances, you know, contingent that you are okay with having that conversation, or maybe you already have. So I would say, you know, a little older. And of course, you know, also just because, I don't know about you, but I could put this movie in front of my son who is 5 and he would just be bored to tears. So I think they gotta be a little older. But contingent on that, it would be a phenomenal movie night. And I actually think this is a really cute date night too, because, you know, it's fun for the guys to watch the sexy girl then all of a sudden become domestic. And I think that it is certainly a chick flick, but there's enough sweet, endearing moments that also just really make it a family movie that I think will work for the men too. So ladies, if you want your man to join you for a good date night, give him a little bit of a warning that it's going to be somewhat of a chick flick. Maybe pour him a little glass of bourbon or whatever his poison is and sit down together and have a great night. This will not disappoint. All right, so let's move on to my number 4 pick, and that is Almost Famous. This movie is amazing. I absolutely love this movie. Talk about a date night. This is a great date night movie. This is an absolutely phenomenal date night movie because it has all the things. It has everything that you would want in a movie. You know, it's got sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and then it's got a little love story, and then it's actually got a really amazing message. So let's dive into that. So the movie really revolves around the character William. He is played by Patrick Fugit, and he is a high schooler that gets the opportunity of a lifetime. So he worked some odd jobs writing about bands, and so he is given the amazing opportunity to write an article for the Rolling Stone on the newest up-and-coming band, Stillwater. So So he obviously jumps at this opportunity. He takes it. He gets to ride on their tour bus with them and join them on their tour, get some little behind the scenes info in order to really get to know this band and deliver a stellar article. Now, while he is there, he is obviously introduced to the band, but he's also introduced to the band's groupies. That's right, because this takes place in, I would say, like the mid 70s, like right in the middle of the rock and roll peak era. And so, yeah, the groupies are still living their best life on that tour bus. And it is there that he meets and is completely enchanted by one particular groupie played by Kate Hudson named Penny Lane. And so the rest of the movie is just really about this journey. You know, he goes on tour with Stillwater. He makes really good friends with a lot of the band, particularly the one of the leads in the band, the guitarist Russell, who is played by Billy Crudup. And Russell has a very tumultuous relationship with Penny Lane. You know, together they are, she's a groupie, so they're lovers, but Penny is wildly in love with Russell, and Russell, to him, he's just a groupie. You know, she isn't anything more than just an accessory to him. And William can see that clear as day, but unfortunately, Penny Lane cannot. And so the whole moral of the story for me, and what I absolutely love about this movie, because again, like I said, it's a perfect daytime movie. I mean, there's so many amazing scenes in this movie. Like particularly, I think the staple scene of this movie is, you know, at one point they're all on the bus together and they're all bonding and they're having a great time. And all of a sudden, Elton John's Tiny Dancer come on and everybody at one point, you know, they're all talking and getting rowdy and then everybody just gets silent. Hold me closer, tiny dancer. It's so good. It's so good. And to me, I think it's like you can't help but sing that at home as well, because it's just, I mean, that song is so intoxicating and that moment is so intoxicating. And the way that they filmed it and they shot it, it almost feels like you're sitting on the bus with them. It's so good. But I love this movie because there's this constant struggle in the movie between being or seeming, quote, cool and being authentic. And it seems to me like the only person who really is 100% okay with being uncool and just being 100% real is William's mom, Elaine. She's played by Frances McDormand, and she's, and if she's kind of the, like, to this movie, what Kathy Bates was to The Waterboy, you know, she's like, foosballs for the devil. And that's kind of how Frances McDormand's character, Elaine, is like in this movie. You know, William is obsessed with rock and roll music, and she's just like, this is the devil's music. You can't listen to this. And she's so amazing, but she absolutely gives zero fucks about being cool. You know, she sees rock and roll, albeit, you know, good and catchy music, but she can see that lifestyle that the band Stillwater is living and see it for what it is rather than being completely intoxicated by it like William is. And eventually William is able to slowly but surely, as he's peeling back Stillwater's layers, he's able to see that with 2020 vision. You know, he's able to really see this band and almost take a little pity on them because they're so obsessed with being cool. You know, half the movie they're referring to William as the enemy because he's there to write an article about him. And, you know, when the article finally does come out, like, they're so upset that they came off as amateurs. So, I mean, the entire movie, it's them trying to protect their cool. And, you know, there's like one amazing scene as well where Russell goes with William to a party and, you know, William is really trying to get Russell to get out of his shell. You know, just be yourself. Just be you. And at first he's having a lot of fun. And then you realize, like, Russell is completely incapable of being himself. I don't even think he knows how to just be. He's obsessed with attention. He's obsessed with being loved and feeling loved by his fans, that he is completely incapable of just taking a beat and having an authentic moment with someone. And, you know, later in that scene, it's like he shows that by getting absolutely hammered and jumping off the roof into the pool. You know, he has to do something to get a reaction out of people. And so it's such a good, good movie. And it is so quotable. One quote that I absolutely love that I feel kind of drives my entire point home. So Lester is a character who is played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. He works for Rolling Stone. So he is helping facilitate this story for William. And they're on the phone with each other. And they're talking back and forth about his experience. And, you know, Lester can tell that he at one point has, that, you know, William has gone a little bit to the dark side and become friends with these people. And they have this like really beautiful conversation. And, you know, William is saying like, it made me feel cool. And Lester's, of course it made you feel cool, but you are not cool. And even though you had fun, you are uncool. And while women will always be a problem for us, most of the great art in this world is about that very same problem. Good-looking people don't have any spine. Their art never lasts. They get girls, but we are smarter. Great art is about conflict, pain, guilt, and the longing of love disguised as sex, and sex disguised as love. And let's face it, you've got a big head start, because the only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you can share with someone else when you are uncool. And I love that, because it is so, so true when you really peel that back and think about it. You know, I think today we can absolutely relate to that. I mean, I think that we have hooked a big giant Louie when it comes to social media, and everything is so over curated. And what are the posts and things that we really connect with, right? They're the things that are raw and real and relatable. And I think that this movie really, really hit the money with driving that point home. But they were able to do it in a way that is fun and feels sexy and thrilling to watch, and overall just leaves you feeling like you had an amazing time. All right, so let's move in to my number three pick. My number three pick for my favorite movies starring Kate Hudson, and that is going to be Something Borrowed. So this movie, again, a lot like Bride Wars, it revolves around two best friends. So you have the first, Rachel, who is played by Jennifer Goodwin, and she is smart, she's beautiful, she's funny, and she is accomplished. She is a lawyer, and while she was in law school, she developed a friendship with a guy named Dex, who is played by Colin Egglesfield. And the two of them kind of do that like classic mistake where they both really have feelings for each other, but neither one of them really admits it. And so the moment just passes them by. You know, that opportunity to really go for it just fizzles, and they just friend zone each other, for lack of a better term. And so one night while they're out for drinks, they're celebrating passing their torts exam. And I'm not going to tell you what torts is because I'm not a lawyer and I don't feel like looking it up, but it is some kind of law thing. And so they are, whoa. And so they are out to eat together. They're celebrating, and in comes in Rachel's very best friend since they were little, Darcy, played by the one and only Kate Hudson. Now, Darcy is everything that Rachel is not. Yes, she is beautiful, just like Rachel, but she has the one thing that Rachel lacks, which is confidence. Darcy is oozing confidence, almost to the point, you know, there's a really, really fine line between confidence and just straight up narcissism. And Darcy really likes to flirt with it. And so Darcy walks in. She is very well aware of Rachel's affection for Dex, but she also picks up on the fact that they have more or less friend zoned each other. And so she goes in, and the movie more or less starts a few years after that, and Dex and Darcy are now engaged. That is right. Darcy and Dex are going to be married, and Rachel has more or less just buried her feelings for Dex and accepted her new reality. And so the movie is all about that journey and the journey of what happens when Rachel finally gets the courage to confess her feelings for Dex, how Dex reacts to that, and how that really impacts not only Dex's relationship with Darcy, but I would say more importantly, Darcy and Rachel's relationship. And I really love it. What I think this movie has that Bride Wars completely lacks is sustenance. Like this movie, again, you could say to yourself, like, what kind of friend would confess her love for her best friend's fiance? Like, that's not a good thing to do. And I'm not advocating or in any way, shape, or form justifying that. But what these two friends have that, you know, Liv and Emma and Bride Wars really, really lack is this very clear love and adoration for each other. You know, even though the two have in different ways betrayed one another's friendship and, you know, done things that could potentially end their friendship, you can tell that each one of them has this very, very deep-rooted love for the other. And that is really what's able to get them through. Because again, if I'm applying my love for my lifelong best friend to this, you know, I think in a friendship, because again, these types of movies love to go for the hyperbole. So, you know, Rachel's kind of the hyperbolic, you know, smart, shy girl. And then Darcy is, you know, the complete opposite, the overly confident, you know, it's all about me, me, me all the time, girl. And I think that in a real friendship, you know, depending on the circumstances of the situation, you can both kind of play that role in different ways. I think depending on the season of life that you're in, regardless of the relationship, if it's a friendship or if it's a marriage or what have you, I think sometimes you're both able to share that spotlight. You know, the spotlight's big enough for the two of you. And then I think sometimes there's seasons where you have to step back and let the other person shine and make it about them and not about you. And I think that this movie portrays that pretty well. You know, I think obviously it's supposed to be a chick flick, so they're going to put their own twists and turns in there to really go for the drama. But I think when you really rip that all away and just look at the friendship, I think it's really indicative of a true friendship, you know, over years where they're really trying to do their best to look out for themselves, do what's going to make them happy, but they're never taking their friend's happiness out of the equation either. And I really appreciate this about that movie. It is what makes it one of my favorites because it just has that sustenance that makes it so real and so relatable. And if that wasn't enough, then you've got, there's this whole side story where Rachel's best friend, Ethan, played by John Krasinski. So he's kind of the voice of reason this entire time, right? So Rachel's, you know, she's acting out in a way that she never has before. And Ethan's kind of there to ground her. And Ethan is being more or less stalked by another girl in their friend group. And he has to, you know, every single time that they go out, because they live in New York City. And so every weekend they go to the Hamptons, and every single weekend this girl is there, and she's like absolutely relentless. And watching that storyline between the two of them is so funny because John Krasinski is so dry yet so adorable all at the same time. This to me is a perfect, perfect girls' night movie. This is the movie. You know, this is, I mean, my husband has sat through and tolerated this movie, but to me, this movie is just really all about friendship, and that, you know, when you find that one girlfriend that you have been friends with forever, it's just, it's so special. So to me, this is the movie where you break out your wine or whatever it is that you want for the evening. You know, you pop the popcorn, you get the wine, the chocolates, all the things for a really fun, fun girls night. All right, so it is time for my number four pick. So we are going to go with The Skeleton Key. I love this movie. This is actually one of my favorite thrillers. It is so much fun to watch. It's actually one of those movies that I can really put on. You know, like sometimes at the end of a long day, my husband and I will be scrolling to try to find something to watch. And, you know, it's like everybody has their limit. You know, sometimes I think mine is like 5 minutes where you scroll, you know, you open up Netflix, you open up Hulu, HBO, you kind of go through your apps and you scroll to see if anything's new. And after about 5 minutes, like I'm just over it. It's like, okay, we just need to pick something because I'm not going to waste the hour and a half of precious time that I have where no one's bothering me, telling me that they're thirsty or they want a snack or, you know, rub my back and like all the things that like I love about bedtime. But it's like, okay, the kids are down, they're peaceful. I literally have an hour and a half before I have to be in a REM cycle. So I don't want to waste this scrolling. And so this is actually one of those movies where we will pick it if we've reached our 5 minute limit. You know, we will just kind of go to that roster of our go-to movies that we know that we're going to like no matter how many times we've seen it. And this is one of them. I mean, I just absolutely love, love, love this movie. So the lead in this movie is the character Caroline, played by Kate Hudson, of course. And she is a hospice nurse working in New Orleans. She is about 25 years old. And you learn very quickly that she has got a background where she had a bad relationship with her father and really didn't get an opportunity to say goodbye properly. So she feels pretty disenfranchised by that relationship. And her working in hospice is almost a way to repay that debt. And so she cares very, very deeply about the care that these patients are getting. And she really feels like in this particular business at this company, what she's doing, that it's a business to them. You know, more than anything, these patients are not patients. They're just, you know, somebody taking up a room. And, you know, naturally, she's very bothered by that. And so one night she's talking to her best friend, Jill, played by Joy Bryant. And she decides to take a job that is in the middle of the New Orleans sticks. So it is in a plantation outside of New Orleans in the swamps. And she decides to take it. She's going to be caring for an old woman, Violet, for her husband who has recently suffered a stroke. So she goes out there. You know, Jill's kind of reluctant. You know, it's like you're moving all the way out there. But, you know, Caroline's going for it. There's no stopping her. She has made up her mind. So she heads out, and this is a beautiful old plantation. And she meets Violet. And, you know, at first things are fine. You know, it's just casual work. You know, she's working for Violet's husband, Ben. So she's showing Caroline the ropes, you know, how to care for Ben, what Ben likes, what he doesn't like. And things are fine at first, but then she starts noticing some erratic behavior from Ben and starts feeling like she is not getting the full story. You know, Caroline is missing some piece of this puzzle. And so she confronts Violet, and Violet decides to tell her the truth. She tells her a story about how this house is haunted. And the house, you know, at one point was inhabited by this very wonderful family, and that they would have these lavish parties all the time, and that the house was just filled with the laughter of these two children and the two workers of this house, Mama Cecile and Papa Justify. And how one night at this beautiful, beautiful, lavish party that they were having, they couldn't find the children. So it became a game. Where's the children? Where are the children? Where'd they go? And so all of these people from this party go and try to find the children. And when they do, they see that these children are being in some kind of grasp with Mama Cecile and Papa Justify. You don't understand exactly what, why, how, where, all the things at first, but the guests of this party are just completely outraged by what they see. They feel like it's some form of sorcery and they want absolutely nothing to do with it. And so they decide to enact their own form of justice on Mama Cecile and Papa Justify. And so Violet tells her this story and how those two still inhabit the house today. They have not left. And that if you look in the mirrors, you can see them. And it is creepy. It is scary and all the things. And Caroline just gets her knees deep in this story and in the rich history of New Orleans and this concept of this practice called hoodoo. And it is just, it's such a good movie. There is an amazing twist to this movie. There's some twists and turns, and it is just it's a great scary movie because they focus so much on the lore of this story. So you were just on the edge of your seat the entire time because you are invested. One thing that I find really, really hard to digest in a lot of these movies is that, you know, they spend so little time really helping you understand the lore and why that is scary. And then they focus the rest of the movie on kind of the cheap jump out scares. But I feel like this movie does the exact opposite, right? They devote a very large amount of time to the lore. You know, they let you kind of really feel like you are along with this ride with Caroline. You know, you are seeing Ben's erratic behavior. You're asking all the same questions. And then you're given all the answers when Caroline is. And then you're watching Caroline digest that. You're watching her figure it out for herself. And you're watching her get immersed in the culture of this home, the culture of this plantation and the idea of hoodoo. And it is just, it's so frightening. You know, there's this one concept that none of it is real if you don't believe. That's kind of the general staple of hoodoo, right? Is that you have to believe in it in order for it to work. And to me, that is what makes this movie so, so scary. Because when you really peel back all the layers and all the things, there is nothing scarier than the human mind. When you really, really think about it, what we are capable of tricking ourselves into feeling like we are seeing, what we are hearing, and what, honestly, letting our imaginations run wild with us. I mean, when you really think about that, that is terrifying. And this movie really kind of, it really lets that general concept run wild because you see Caroline as this very stable, very together, structured young woman. And then you see that all fall apart as she lets her mind run away with her. And it's so good. I absolutely insist, if you have not seen this movie, you have got to give it a watch. It is not that scary. So for all of my friends out there who, you know, live alone or don't want to watch something that's going to give them nightmares, I don't think this movie is going to do that. It's not going to give you nightmares. It's not a drop gory. There's absolutely no gratuitous gore or anything of that nature. It's really more than anything a psychological thriller. It's just meant to plant that seed in your mind just as Violet plants it for Caroline and then just watch everything slowly, slowly unravel. And I promise you will not regret it if you give this a try. Just make sure that you've got somebody to watch it with. All right, so without further ado, let's roll on in to my top movie, my top Kate Hudson movie pick. Now, before I reveal what that is, I imagine that most of you, by process of elimination, can assume what I'm going to name. And I just have to say just how much I absolutely love this movie. And that is How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. This movie is the ultimate rom-com. I love this movie so much. Truly, when I think about the best rom-coms out there, I mean, I try really hard not to double dip. So if I ever come out with a rom-com episode, I will more than likely not include this just so that I'm not reviewing it for a second time. But you should know that this is one of my favorite rom-coms of all time. It is brilliant. It, of course, is starring Kate Hudson. She plays the character of Andy Anderson. And you have the other main character played by Matthew McConaughey, who plays Benjamin Barry. So Andy Anderson is a hot, sexy magazine editor. She works for Composure Magazine, and she is their how-to girl, you know, so how to do your eyebrows, how to do your taxes, how to do this and that, and all things related to composure. So it's all about beauty and sex and having, you know, the most thrilling life ever. And then Benjamin Barry is almost the male equivalent. He is also in the magazine world, but more on the editing side. So he is, on the advertising side. So he is all about, you know, very manly man. So he does all the beer stuff and the sports stuff and all the very, you know, hyperbolic manly man things. But he is desperate to get his hands on the big money diamonds. So he has his eye on this massive diamond account, which is more than likely going to go towards the two women who he works with, because naturally their boss thinks that, you know, advertising as far as a diamond needs to be marketed towards women. So who better to market towards women than, you know, a fellow woman, of course. Well, Ben disagrees. Ben thinks that he knows women so well that he can market this diamond for women. And his justification for that is, you know, picking a diamond is like falling in love. Selecting the right diamond is just like selecting the right partner. And he knows everything about love. You know, Ben knows it all. So he feels so cocky that his colleagues decide to make it a wager. So they're saying, okay, so we're sitting here in this bar and we are going to pick any woman in this bar. And if you are that confident that you can make anyone fall in love with you, then whomever we shall pick, you have 10 days to make her fall in love with you. And so hit pause, let's rewind and go back to Andy. So with Andy, she loves being the how-to girl, right? She's fun and sexy, but the only problem is that she has a master's in journalism and she didn't really see herself doing like how-to fluffy things. She wants to write about politics and, you know, theology, you know, these really big topics that she feels like really matter in the world. So she's feeling stuck. She doesn't know what to do. And so she has this big topic with her boss where her boss says, you know, if you make your column an absolute must read, then I will give you the freedom to write about whatever you want. And so Andy is, you know, she's scrolling around for ideas. What can I do? What can I do to make this a must read? Well, it just so happens that her best friend gets dumped, and her best friend, you know, she's kind of a, you know, stage 5 clinger, a little bit of a sweaty tryhard, and she's absolutely devastated, but she's perplexed as to why this has happened to her in the first place. And so Andy, you know, she has a light bulb moment. They're sitting in their staff meeting and she's saying, okay, look at this. Look at Michelle. She's beautiful. She is smart and all the things, yet she is making all these really classic mistakes with men. And so I want to write an article about almost a how-to in reverse. How, you know, what not to do. Let's, you know, I'll date a guy and I'll make all of the classic mistakes that would drive him away. And then I'll write an article about it. And so the boss coins the term, how to lose a guy in 10 days. So that exact same night, and in that exact same bar that Ben is in, discussing how he can make any woman fall in love with him. Andy and her girlfriends just so happen to walk into to find a guy to drive away. And what a world it is, because they just so happen to find and choose each other. Now, it does have to be mentioned that the two women just so happen to be in on it. They are very well aware of who Andy Anderson is and the fact that she is looking for a man to drive away for her article. So they specifically choose Andy for that reason, because they know Ben's not going to have an easy time. But Ben is too enchanted by Kate Hudson's beauty and how cool and fun she is that he is just excited to be able to spend 10 days with this hottie. And so that's exactly what the rest of the movie is about. It's just the unfolding of these two people who have bet against each other. And so Andy is making all of these ridiculous moves, and a lot of them actually, side note, were actually improvised. So there's this whole idea of a love fern that was all Kate Hudson. She brings it over and she's like, it's our love fern, Benny, boo, boo, boo. And, you know, she's one night she's like making out with Ben, and it's very clear that they're about to take things to the next level. And she looks over down at Ben's crotch and she goes, does Princess Sophia want to come out to play? That's right. You heard me right. She names his penis Princess Sophia. And, you know, she's like, little big, I do not know. We will find out. It's just, it's so ridiculous. I absolutely love it. And like, there's this whole scene where Andy Anderson brings this book, and it's like composite pictures of both of their faces to see what their children would most likely look like. And that was all Kate Hudson's idea. And the entire thing was improvised by her. You know, at first Ben's like, no, I don't need to see that. And he's like, well, first of all, where did you even get these pictures? And she's like, well, I got them from your mom. And you don't want to see what our children will look like, Ben? You don't want to see our children? And so amazing. And so again, Andy is making all of these like hyperbolic, crazy, crazy mistakes. Like, she's acting like the ultimate stage 5 clinger, crazy girlfriend. And Ben, because he's so desperate to win this bet and make Andy fall in love with him, that he's just putting up with all of this. So Andy is like scratching her head, being like, why aren't you dumping me? And like, I don't understand why you are sticking around. Like, what, how much crazier can I possibly get? And of course, because it's a rom-com, the two of them eventually fall in love. And how do they fall in love? Well, it just so happens over a round of bullshit. Now, bullshit, I have to say, is like one of the most underrated games there is out there. Now, one year, all of my best friends all went to Florida on vacation. We left our kids, we hugged them goodbye and said sayonara for a week. We are going to be sipping Mai Tais and all the things without you. So we went to Florida on our last day. It rained all day, which we were perfectly fine with. So we just took that as an opportunity to binge drink and play card games. And we played bullshit for like 8 hours. And I did not get bored once. It is the most fun game ever. I probably like it so much because it's the only time that I really feel super, super comfortable lying. Anyone that knows me knows that I am so paranoid. You know, I will try to lie, but there's something inside of me that's like, no, they know. And I cannot do it. I would rather bite the bullet and live with whatever wrath you are prepared to give me than live with the paranoia and the guilt that I will get caught one day. But in bullshit, I feel like I can do it guilt-free, because that's the entire object of the game, right? Is to lie. So, underrated game. I digress. So, I love this movie so much. And we have to talk about Kate Hudson's yellow dress. This movie came out in the mid-aughts, right around my senior year in high school. And there were so many girls for my senior prom that tried to replicate that yellow dress. That yellow dress, I feel like for any millennial out there, that was like the staple of like the ultimate gown to wear. I mean, even to this day, when I think about like one of the most stunning looks, it is that dress. I mean, I don't have the body for that. I have like, well, first of all, my breasts are way too big to ever pull off anything that would require me going braless. So that is just done right then and there. Forget about it after having children. I mean, if I don't have something to tuck my boobs in, then like it's just not happening. So it's not for me. I've laid that to rest and made peace with the fact that yellow dress will never be my destiny. But if I have to think about it for someone else, her body on that dress, the way that that dress lays on her body, the silhouette it gives her, the halter for the shoulders, and then that really effortless pullback that she does with her hair. I mean, that's an iconic look to this day, 15 years later. Iconic. And I just absolutely love this movie. You know, this movie was originally going to star Gwyneth Paltrow, and it has to be said that I am very, very happy about that because I know some people like Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm not one of those people. You know, I find her to be pretentious. I find her to actually be a sweaty tryhard. You know, I think she just tries so hard to be relatable. Because it's like, oh, like I have a vagina candle, like I'm funny, but I can't get on board with it. I just can't handle it. She's so stuffy. It just feels like it would just be exhausting to be in her presence at all times. So I'm very, very glad that that did not come to fruition. I love that Kate Hudson is in this role. I find Kate Hudson to be so much fun. She, for me, feels like the type of girl where she works hard, but she plays even harder. And I like that about her. You know, if you're working with her or you're friends with her, you could probably go get a beer with her afterwards. And I mean, her mom, Goldie Hawn, is the exact same way. I mean, she just seems like a good time Sally. Oh, but How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is such a good movie. It's such a classic. This is the ultimate girls' night movie, truly. Like, good. This is like, you know, for something borrowed, you want to get your red wine and your chocolates. This is like, you need those, but you also need the roll of cookie dough. It's like the absolute ultimate girls' night movie. Like, go get your fuzzy slippers, go put on your nightgown, go get that roll of cookie dough, kick your husband out, all the things. This is the ultimate of ultimate girls' night movies. It has absolutely everything. It's got the hot girl. It's got the hot guy. It's got the, you know, the fun magazine lifestyle. It's got the funny element of like, you know, the two people that, you know, they don't understand why one another's doing the other thing, but we know as the audience, so we're in on the joke. And then at the end, you know, it's the fun musical number, because who doesn't love a movie that ends with a rendition of You're So Vain? This girl right here, I love it. I love it. Ugh, you gotta go check it out. As I said, if you haven't already seen this movie, you got to do it. I'm almost jealous, if you haven't seen it, that you get the opportunity to watch it for the first time as an adult. If by whatever chance you are doing that, you got to drop me a DM and let me know what you thought. All right. So without further ado, let's roll in to the review of this week's newest movie, Music. So again, it of course stars the one and only Kate Hudson, and she plays the character of Zoo. And Zoo is a recovering drug addict, alcoholic. She's trying to figure out her way in this world. You know, she is still in the drug world as she is dealing, but she herself is clean. And she's just trying to figure out what her next move is. And while this is happening, you have the character Music, who is played by Maddie Zingler. And she is She is a very remarkable young lady. She is on the autism spectrum, and she is cared for by their grandmother, Millie. And so Millie has come up with a beautiful system in order to really allow music to thrive. You know, music for a huge chunk of the movie is always wearing headphones. That's a big part of her personality. And it is later described that she uses that as a form of filtering because she doesn't see the world as Zoo or Millie or a lot of the other people around her, but rather she sees it in her own unique way. And she's so overstimulated at times that the music almost helps to filter out the world around her and really help her have a singular focus. And so Millie really helps provide her with a world that music can really understand and a routine that really just allows her to live her best life. So every morning it's the same. You know, she makes music eggs and then music goes out and goes for a walk, and they live in a really wonderful neighborhood, and all the people around in the neighborhood care for music. It's almost like this unspoken bond. You know, there's a certain gentleman that is always about 10 steps ahead of music, and he pays for a newspaper. And music, who hasn't grasped the concept that you actually have to pay for the newspaper, walks up and the two of them have a chat, and she takes a newspaper because the gentleman in front of her has paid for it. And, you know, same kind of thing for like a popsicle later in the movie. And so Millie has really set up this community around her of people that equally love music, equally want to see her do well. And unfortunately, Millie, pretty early on in the movie, ends up passing away. And so the next of kin, the next person that's going to be able to care for music, because, you know, music at this point is a minor still. So she needs to have a primary caregiver. If not, she would go into the system and potentially go into foster care. And so, of course, Zoo is contacted. And at first, Zoo's idea is like, okay, well, you know, I don't have a place to stay, so I'll stay here. And for as long as I need in order to get the logistics wired out to get you put in with the right people that you need. And so, you know, she's not into it. You know, you can tell she loves music. You know, music is her sister. She's there for making sure that she has what she needs temporarily from Zoo, but Zoo also isn't in a position personally where she's able to have the patience for music. You know, she doesn't understand how music likes her eggs, and she doesn't understand that she's going out and taking her walk and that it's a safe walk. And so she's trying to learn music's routine and, you know, do exactly what Millie did, but she's not really given the tools to understand. You know, Millie's not there to walk her through it. And so it's a very stressful situation at first for Zoo, until she meets Millie's old neighbor, Ebo, played by Leslie Odom Jr. That is right. Aaron Burr from Hamilton plays Ebo, and he is phenomenal. He is so great. And so he's like the first person that really extends some compassion to Zoo. He knows music. Music knows him. So they're very comfortable with each other. And he, you know, he comes on and he shows her the ropes. And it's just, it's such a really, really beautiful movie. But wait, what makes this movie so, so, so special is that, again, as I said, because of the fact that music doesn't see the world in the exact same way as Ebo or Zoo, they're constantly jumping back and forth between Zoo's vantage point or Ebo's vantage point and music's vantage point. And, you know, she's got her headphones. Music is a really big part of her life. And so the way that she's able to process information and process just general concept is through music. So it's almost like she sees the world as a music video. You know, she's doing all these amazing interpretive dancing, and then the people around her that she's interacting with in that moment are singing to her. It's just, it's so, 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 so special. And there's all sorts of amazing colors and visual effects within them. It's just, it's so interesting to see the world that they feel like that they've created for music. It's just, it's so neat. And it's so beautiful because they're able to tell music's side of the story, but in such a unique way. You know, not only are you given a chance to see her vantage point, but then you're also just able to enjoy that because it's just, it's so unique. And so this movie was written and directed by Sia. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's really just all about family, like creating family and whatever that might look like. You know, just like in the movie Raising Helen, which is somewhat similar in the fact that you have someone who becomes a caregiver, you know, without really feeling fully prepared for it. You know, it's just a movie about the fact that family doesn't always look conventional, doesn't always look the way that you think that it's going to look. And that really doesn't matter. That at the end of the day, a family is who you create. You know, whoever you choose to have by your side, whoever you choose to love, and whoever chooses to love you back is your family can be whoever you create it for. Family can look however you want it to look and have whatever dynamic you choose to have. And I just think that's a really beautiful, beautiful concept. And it's such a good movie. It's so good to me. Now, there are some themes of sex and some themes of drugs and alcohol. So I think as far as it being a family movie, I actually think this is a phenomenal family movie if your children are old enough to be comfortable discussing that concept with them. Because, of course, you know, there's the idea of death because there's the death of the grandmother, Millie. And then, you know, Zoo is a recovering addict. And so there's just some adult themes. So I think if your child's old enough, you know, whatever age you feel is appropriate, but just, you know, be warned that that's something to think about. But I think all things considered, it is a phenomenal family movie. It's such a sweet, sweet movie. And I actually think it was a great date night movie too. You know, my husband and I watched it together. I wanted to watch it specifically for this podcast, but we really enjoyed it. You know, both he and I teared up a little bit throughout this movie, and it has some funny moments. It has a lot of endearing moments. And, you know, just really at the end of the day, like I said, it's just a great movie about how family can be whoever you want it to be. And I think that's a concept that can span just about anyone. I think every single person, regardless of your background or your familial situation, can appreciate the idea that family can be however you want it to look. So I absolutely recommend this movie. I give it 4 out of 5 stars, maybe even 4.5, just because I think it's so cute and so unique the way that they choose to tell music's side of the story. So I absolutely urge you, if you feel like giving it a rent, I believe it was $6.99 to rent on iTunes. So if you feel like spending a little cash money on it, but I'm sure it'll be available to stream in no time otherwise. All right, guys, we did it. We did it again. We have done it. Let me know if you end up checking out music and what you think. I would love to know your feedback on the movie. And if you check out any of these Kate Hudson movies that you hadn't seen before, please do the same. Let me know what you thought. It would mean a lot to me if you would please rate, review, and subscribe. That really helps a lot. Thank you guys so much, and I'll see you next week.